tyranny like crazy. We've got tyranny everywhere, folks. Welcome to Bloodlines on Eurofolk Radio. Sorry about the delay, but Microsoft did one of its ridiculous updates and messed up my sound settings. I think it messed up every last one of them, and I had to call Paul and get it all straightened out so that we could go live. So welcome, everybody. Welcome, Michael from Sweden. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Eli, and I hope everybody hears me also loud and clear here from Sweden. And if anybody can't see this tyranny today, well, they are blind as bats.
Yeah, that's
your
right.
Is eating their own people and using, by the way, they're using this phony mask, but then they're sharing water between each other.
Right. Drinking from the same glass.
Yes, right? Exactly. Uh-huh. It's tyranny. This is tyranny. And if someone doesn't see it, they are blind. They are so blind. Yeah, they're blind as a bat. Over to you.
Yeah, by the way, there was a video, a lady entitled Bombshell Video regarding the fact that the coronavirus, COVID-19, is actually just human DNA. It has the same genetic makeup. And so all they're testing for is junk DNA that's exists in everybody's body already. And that video was removed, censored by YouTube. Fortunately, I saved a copy. I downloaded it. I'm going to put that up on Eurofolk Radio after our show. Because it's a very, very important video, and I'll couple that with another video. But more and more people are coming out and criticizing Bill Gates. This is getting crazier by the day, folks. They want to patent our DNA.
That way is the RNA. They want to put in a little RNA, so it makes your body makes their organism, and then they want to patent you and own you. And also they want to make people to believe that the whole, I guess, Adamic race is the enemy. That is the virus. That's what they're going to tell you. Well, your own DNA is the virus. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Hear it. That's what they want.
Yeah.
And then they want to patent all the people on the earth. And then they just can, okay, now we can kill you because we own you.
Yeah. Now, Bill Gates wants to patent, he wants to call this a vaccine. This is not a vaccine. This is GMO for humans. That's what it is. You know, that's what it is. It's not a vaccine. They want to have your DNA be programmable from a remote location. So they want to inject nanotechnology splice it into your DNA. That is exactly what they want to do, folks. That's not a vaccine. That's GMO. Okay.
Yeah, they want to make it because you can never patent something that is from nature, so you can't patent the human body. But then if they can make it to be theirs by putting in RNA that will modify your DNA, so your own body is producing this organism, then probably they will try to patent it and say, we own it. We own you.
Now we own you, right? That's exactly what they're trying to do. And, of course, with all the corrupt politicians in the world, especially in the UN, and just about every, you know, the European Union, all these international organizations, none of which are elected by people. They're all selected by the Rothschilds as their spokespeople, spokescritters that have no connection to the people whatsoever. This is the end times. This is Mystery Babylon in the end times, folks. That's what it is. How can it get any worse? You know, so this is an attempt by them. It's just the same as Monsanto did with their GMO crops. And what they did was if one farmer had a GMO crop and the wind blew some of their seeds into a neighboring farmer's property, and that their crop grew there, they would go and sue that farmer for illegally growing their crop, okay? But the farmer had no control over that. The wind blew the GMO seeds onto his property. So Monsanto was filing these nuisance suits against farmers who did absolutely nothing wrong, and the wind just blew the Monsanto seeds onto their property. Well, this is no different, folks. So, but they're doing it deliberately because there's no way the wind can blow mutant DNA into your genome, right? This has to be done purposefully, and this is what they are doing. Can you believe this, Michael?
Well, that's what it is. Isn't it said in Revelation to understand Satan's depth? Because our people doesn't really understand Satan's depth, or the Edomites, the usual, so they're those cohorts. I call them that because the other names, that's phony, that's made up. I call them Edomites. That's why I use that word for them.
Yeah. So if we're not in the end times now, I don't know where we're at. Right? Okay. All right, folks. So getting to today's subject, this may have to be a two-parter anyway. It's from the Ensign Message, and the title is The Virgin Mary's Blood Relationship to the British Royal Family. And I'll go ahead and put this message into the chat room, this link, because this is basic, how should I put it, basic Christian identity theology, that we know that the lineage of the Holy Family was carried on in Europe, in France, in Britain, in Ireland, in Rome, etc., etc. We know this. We're the only group in Christianity that understands the true migrations and the true genetic, speaking of genetics, the genetic carrying on of that genome of the house of Judah, house of Israel, and the specific Holy Family, the house of David, has been carried on in Europe through the Caucasian people, not through Jews, but through us, including your royal house in Sweden, although I understand your royal house has been corrupted by the Rothschilds just as much as the British royal throne has been corrupted.
Yeah, they have probably, but the French they put on the throne here, Bernadotte. I'm a bit I have my questions about it. That's what I can say, but I have no, what to say, solid proof of it. It could be that it is a rightful heir of okay, David, but I'm doubtful because he doesn't come from that area that you and me discussed last time. That you come from that place in Germany, Saxony. Doesn't come from.
No, you say the current royal house of Sweden comes from France? Is that what you're
saying?
Yeah,
they come from France. They come from this family called Bernadotte.
Okay. Okay, so you'd have to investigate their background. But don't forget that Alsace and Lorraine, those two great agricultural areas of Europe, have always been fought over by Germany and France. So it could be, if they come from that area, the chances are they are legitimate, descendants of David. But you'd have to do a background check on those people. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
What I understand, the people that has tried to do it, it's hard to find because it has been, the water has been muddy.
Right. All right. Okay. So this article is by Arnold Kennedy. Okay. So I'll go ahead and take the first few paragraphs, and then I'll turn it over to you. Okay, here we go.
And Eli,
yes,
just some points here, because I wrote down before last time we ended that we should also then mention Simon Magnus' involvement in the formation of Catholic Church, maybe how that forms in here. But that's something I should write down and remind you of, the Edomite involvement in that part.
Yeah, we could probably save that for part two. Because because since we went on so late, we're almost at the top of the hour, so probably should save that for next week. And I haven't had a chance to do any research on that either. We have talked about it in the past, but with regard to the attempt by Simon Magus to hard to say whether he actually created the Catholic Church. I wouldn't go that far, but he created the program. Let's put it that way. He created the program for, what's the word I'm looking for? Making it a false church, creating a false church separate from the Israelite identity of the Israelites, okay, in the New Testament, okay? So rather than having a genetic church or congregation, which it's supposed to be, he's the one who started false versions of the Israelite genome and the false version of Christianity. All right, so we need to go that into that in detail. Okay, very good. Yeah. Okay.
Let's start with the article, and you start, and then I will jump in when you feel so.
Okay, all right. It is easy to think of Palestine in Mary's day as being remote, even cut off from the civilized world. To suggest that Britain was known to Jesus or the disciples of Jesus is to invite a puzzled, if not mocking, smile. The traditional Christian view seems not to extend to the west of Palestine beyond Rome. Well, yeah, they all believe, and because there's almost no historical backup of modern Christianity, Judeo-Christianity. They don't go into the history of the scriptures. They don't go into any history at all. They just teach dogma based on their view of the New Testament. That's all it is. That's what all the modern Christianity is. They have no historical underpinning whatsoever. They have abandoned history. So let's continue. Though everyone knows that Palestine was occupied by the forces of Rome, few realize the intercourse which took place between the Middle East, Rome, and Britain in those days. And I would also mention Germany, France, and Ireland, okay, and even Iceland. Still fewer have absorbed an appreciation of the amount of communication there was between nations east and west in the last century B.C. and the first century A.D. Until we have an appreciation of how well-traveled the influential people of those days were, we will not have an appreciation of the real situation which existed in what we now call the Middle East at that time, or Palestine. It is unfortunate that very little that we learn in our churches helps us relate Mary, Jesus, the disciples, any of the characters we find in the New Testament or the Roman hierarchy to the interrelated world society which existed then, or to comprehend them moving across the stage of history. Let me warn you, Michael, Arnold Kennedy has a horrible writing style. Right? That was a run-on sentence if there ever was one, okay? let me comment here, because it goes way, way back further than the first century B.C., because Solomon's ships crossed the Atlantic Ocean, and he had people in Michigan mining copper, I believe it was copper, in Michigan. And they left the Tetragrammaton. They inscribed the Tetragrammaton on rocks all over the place in Michigan, Illinois. There's a cave in Illinois that has all kinds of Egyptian artifacts in it. Where did those Egyptian artifacts come from? They came on Solomon's ships, okay? A lot of these mound builders were Israelites, and they inscribed rocks with the Tetragrammaton and calendars and things like that. So it goes back to the days of Solomon, 900 B.C., okay? That's how far back it goes, folks. And possibly even earlier, David may have also sent ships across the Atlantic Ocean. And some of those ships may be ships from the various tribes that just got lost and then wound up coming to America's shores, all right? I mean, if they were able to go to Iceland, you know, in pretty much prehistoric times, it's not that much further to Greenland, okay? And the temperature of the earth was a little warmer in those days. We had a cold spell, and we're actually still in that cold spell now. But it was warmer in those days, and Greenland was not frozen over then like it is today, okay? In fact, the ice cap over Greenland is retreating a little bit, not much. So Arnold Kennedy is absolutely right on the money when he's talking about, you know, the world as known to the apostles, to Yahshua Messiah, the apostles, and all the people living there, was a much bigger place than is commonly assumed by today's Judeo-Christians, okay? So, and then the next heading after this paragraph is a British royal, the first bishop of Rome. So, let me take this next paragraph. That Peter was the first bishop of Rome is believed by Roman Catholics as a matter of dogma, but it is to be wondered whether it is believed as a matter of fact. St. Peter, too, has been reduced by church teaching to almost a myth, a lucky mascot, and someone who is the butt of jokes about heaven. I've never heard any jokes about Peter. Maybe I'm not aware that Catholics do that. I don't know who else does. His bishopric of Rome is believed hardly at all by those of the Protestant persuasion. That's correct. Some of whom will ignore any evidence contrary to their set view on the matter, thinking it would seem that a fact ignored is a fact abrogated. The first bishop of Rome was, in fact, a member of the British royal family, Linus by name. So let me just say really quickly here that Peter was sent not to Rome, but to the old area, the east of the Tigris-Euphrates River area, okay, the Fertile Crescent. That's where Peter went, because that's where the Parthians were, folks. That's where the Parthians were. He was sent to the Parthians. Back to you.
Yes, yeah, and that also what ring to me when you read this introduction is this, that, as you said, the churches today has been watered down to merely dogma, and they are, as I think you have described them as, they are very wide, but shallow, only very shallow. So I don't remember the wordings you have used, but they are shallow, as very shallow, very very wide. And that's why I guess so many of our white people doesn't even listen, attend the church, because it's so narrow, it's so wide. It is just dogmas. It have no connection to history. But here, we point that in, as you said here. That's what I find so intriguing in this when you read those articles, that you also tie in history. That's what make me. I really love that. So yeah. And then also the Solomon ship that you were describing, yeah, weren't those the ship that were was out in the world and buying in materials to when they were building the temple, when Solomon's porch was built?
Yeah, they went all over the world. They were able to, they were seafaring, just like the Egyptian ships were able to cross the sea. The Phoenician ships were able to cross the sea. And, and then even the Viking ships, who was the Eric the Red, I think his name, or Snorri, one of them, sailed to America, mm-hmm. right, in 1000 AD. They were here in 1000 AD.
They were. Yeah. And, Columbus was not the first one.
No. Yeah.
He was not. Okay, yeah, so just a digression there. I will start up then.
Okay.
The British royal, the first bishop of Rome, to write of Judean or Israelite Christian may seem odd to some, but it should be realized that Jesus did not establish a religion called Christianity, nor did he attend a church called a Christian church. He did not see himself as a founding new religion. He did not want, the word used, to become Christians. Right. No, yeah. Because they weren't.
Right, and his name wasn't Jesus either. Nobody called him Jesus, they called him Yeshua. Right, back to you.
Jesus wanted Israelite to accept the truth that the Messiah of Israel had come. Quite a different proposition.
Amen.
Jesus saw his ministry as being a continuation of the ministry of the Old Testament prophets, but with the Spirit taking the place of the letter and his own once and for all sacrifice, taking the place of the traditional sacrifices. This part of the law was fulfilled, but Jesus made it clear that the rest of the law still stood fast.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Exactly. Now, actually, he contradicts himself a little here. The Spirit doesn't totally take the place of the letter. The letter still exists, but so taking the place of is overstating the case. But then, in the last sentence here, this part of the law was fulfilled, but Jesus made it clear that the rest of the law still stood fast. The only laws that were abrogated were the sacrificial laws. That's it. All the rest of the Torah still applies. Okay? Now, that's basic Christian identity teaching on this matter, and I would say Arnold Kennedy totally agrees with us on this point. Okay. Yeah. So he says that Jesus saw his ministry as being a continuation of the ministry of the Old Testament prophets. That's totally correct. And he did not abrogate the Old Testament in any way, shape, or form. Because even Paul explains to us that the sacrifices which were established at Mount Sinai, the Levitical priesthood, was temporary. He tells us it was temporary. It was to discipline the Israelites who were, and still are, rebellious against Yahweh's laws, okay? So, but then Israel had to be redeemed before this change, the new covenant, could take place. And so that's all, and Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 37 explain that I will put my spirit on the children of Israel, you know, and then this will be the new covenant. And it remains with the house of Israel and house of Judah. No other people are incorporated into the covenants ever, anywhere in Scripture. Back to you.
Yeah, exactly. And if you are grafted in, then you have belonged to the tree before, like the Romans, they right. were grafted in. That is the one, because they were Israelite. They were from Sarah, Judah.
Right. Well, but Paul uses the term broken off. If your branch be broken off, which means you were originally part of the tree, right?
Yes.
He doesn't say you graft in trees from anywhere. He says you have to be the broken off branch. That's exactly the terminology he uses, and the churches ignore that as well. Okay? It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible the deception that goes on with this Judeo-Christianity. Back to you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's continue. Paul ministered in Rome, and we know that Paul was friendly with at least one British princess. He mentions her and her husband by name in the epistles to Timothy. And this is from 2 Timothy 4:21. Do they diligence to come before winter? Eubulus, green thee, and Pudens, and Linus, and Claudia, and all the brethren.
Yes, yeah, these Greek names, Greek/Latin names, are sometimes hard to pronounce. And I think it was Eubulus, I think it was. Actually, I just lost my place here. Let me go back. And I need to go to the other browser. Eubulus greeteth thee, and Pudens, and Linus, and Claudia. Okay, Eubulus is a tough one. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, it is. Okay. As then, Paul ministered in Rome and met British royalty in Rome. Why should the thought that Mary or Jesus or both of them visited Britain be received with a rather derogatory, if polite smile? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was not, at the time of Jesus, as we shall see, at all uncommon for people from the Middle East to visit Britain. They had been doing it in their thousands for hundreds of years before the Virgin Mary was born. Yes, here we see, as you said, that was Solomon's ships was coming here to Britain, and probably also up here in the Nordic countries as well. And in your country also, didn't they dig out minerals for the building of the temple in America?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, they needed copper to make brass, okay? So, yeah, like I said, there's all kinds of evidence. The Tetragrammaton is inscribed all over America. It's just about every single state you will find that here in America. Okay.
Yes, and weren't they also in Brazil and digging out? Many there too.
And Peru, yeah, Brazil, yeah. And Peru, exactly. Yeah, yeah, they got around.
Yeah,
yeah, they sailed up the Amazon River, right? They were everywhere. Okay, so and they were able to. They had to fight off Indians wherever they went, right? But yeah. Okay, yeah.
And isn't it also then referred in those in the South? American tribes that in the past they were led by big white men that drew them
bearded white men. All their legends say the bearded white men.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because the native Indians, most native Indians around the world, do not have full beards like we do. Okay, the blacks in Africa are not fully bearded. The American Indians are not fully bearded. So only if they mix with us do they develop full beards on their faces. Of course, I'm talking about the men, right? So, but now just quickly, the reference is in Romans chapter 11. What will the verse 19? Thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off, that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest he spare not thee. Okay? So, clearly, twice he's talking about the branches being broken off from the original tree. And he's talking to the Romans, which means they're Zerah-Judah. All right, back to you.
Yes, but that is ignored by the church, and they believe you can graft, or you can take anything. You
Yeah,
can graft in an apple and an apple tree with an olive tree, whatever. Come on, can't
yes,
happen.
yeah, amen.
Okay, let's continue. Romans sent children to Britain to be educated. It is history warped view of the isolation of the British Isles at that time, which makes the divine visit to Britain seems so incredible to us. In fact, the traffic was not all one way. Tradition has it that Anna, Mary's mother, came from Cornwall and had undertaken the journey in the opposite direction.
Okay, let me stop right there. Wait, I see he's talking about Joseph of Arimathea. Joseph of Arimathea was a tin merchant who had tin owned tin mines in Britain. Okay, so it's quite possible that Anna, maybe she was his daughter or a cousin of Joseph. She may have been born in Britain and accompanied Joseph back to Palestine on occasion, because he got around. He got around, and he probably sailed back and forth between Britain and Palestine numerous times. No telling here, because that history is lost to us. But as he pointed out at the very beginning, these Israelites got around. They got around all over the world, and there was a direct connection between Palestine and Britain, going all the way back to Zerah-Judah, 1900 BC. Okay? All
Yeah,
right.
and isn't
Okay.
also because we know that we have the history of Jesus when he was born, but then also his ministry. But that was like 30 years later. So you have a 30-year period where he were probably out in the world. He was probably in Britain. He was probably everywhere and doing and got educated with, I don't know if he was going with Joseph or whoever. So he was out traveling. He wasn't in, I believe, he wasn't in Palestine all that time. He was probably out and traveling as well.
A couple of comments here. Bronze, sorry, I said brass. Bronze, tin and copper. Thank you, Nimble Horse. All right, there was no brass in the ancient world. Yeah, okay. I'm not a metallurgist. All right, and Bavari Man says the Indians in the East, Inca Land, Peru, were white people by the name of Chachapoyas. Maybe that's where the Chacha came from. People did not. They come there via the Amazon River. Descendants of them are still there. Yes, they are. And in fact, who was it? It was one of the Spanish conquistadors who went to Peru and found a quote unquote Indian maiden who was white, and she was so beautiful that he took her back to Spain. Okay? Those are descendants of the Israelites that migrate from the ships. From the ships of either David or Solomon, more than likely. Back to you.
Yeah, I've read that too. That the Spanish when they were invading or were conquering South America, then they did brought some of the ladies back because they were so beautiful and because they were white. So they were the trace of those Indians. But isn't the same also in America? Some of your Indians are a matter of fact Israelites that did stay there.
Well, it's interesting. The Lewis and Clark expeditions—they went from the Atlantic coast. Actually, it started out in St. Louis, and tried to find a path to the Pacific Ocean. They went north. I think they went up the Mississippi, then up the Missouri, and toward the northwest. And they ran into a group of Indians called the Manai, M-A-N-N-A-I. And these Indians, according to their words, were white. They were a white tribe that stood out from the rest of the Indians. And could they be from Manassa?
Sounds possible.
Okay, where the word name Manai. That's an unusual name for Indians. Manai. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's continue. The main stumbling block is that most people do not think of Bible people. Mary, Jesus, Joseph, and Arimathea, Pilate, Herod, the disciples, and Paul as world travelers. Well, they were.
Yes, they were. Yes.
Just
absolutely.
Because maybe the scripture is not telling exactly where they went, but you have time gaps in the history. For example, for Jesus, when he was small, the time when he was 20, yeah. 25, then he was out and traveling and learning about the world, I guess.
Yeah, well, the missing years from 12 to 30.
Yeah,
where exactly. Was he? Where was he those 18 years? You know, probably sightseeing in Britain, right? Or learning, or by his uncle's side. Joseph of Arimathea was his uncle.
Yeah, didn't right? he go with Joseph? I believe he did. I read that he was on a trip with Joseph, and Joseph was in Britain. And didn't he also form the first, I used the word, church there?
Right.
In Britain when he was there.
Yeah, and there's that song written by, the great British poet. A song about Jesus walking on the soil of Britain at Glastonbury. Okay, and the Glastonbury thorn was probably planted later, but the Glastonbury thorn was planted at Glastonbury. I think after the crucifixion. And it blooms during Christmas and Easter. It's the only tree in the world that blooms twice yearly at those times. And speaking of grafting, they cut a branch off of that tree and planted it in Washington, D.C., at Washington Cathedral. And that tree also blooms at Christmas and Easter, okay? Which we would consider more our Passover and the, what's the dedication? Yeah, dedication, I guess it would be. Jesus was not Catholic.
No.
But Christmas and Easter are the times of the year where that tree blooms. Those are the only two trees in the world that bloom that way. Back to you.
And that is no coincidence if you have those coincidence science people that believe in coincidence all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are no coincidence. Okay, let's continue. Mentally, they think of people of Bible times as being chained into their main moment in history. Thus, we are inclined not to think of Pilate in any other context than standing on the balcony on the fateful day, washing his hands. We do not see him as a baby needing nappies changed. We do not see him playing games with boys in the street. We do not see him with toothache.
Yeah.
Pilate, all the Bible people are, to most people, disembodied concepts, and we see them confined within their historic moment.
Yeah.
Or moments.
Like Superman and Batman, right? Yeah, they have no historic context for the reality of Yahshua and all these other historical people. In fact, you know, the secular world is constantly trying to deny that Jesus even existed, right? But yet there's all kinds of records in the New Testament. Every single word of the New Testament has been subject to criticism. And, for example, the Gospel of Luke is correct in every single detail of who was the tetrarch and the petrarch and, you know, mayor and whatnot and the years that the census were taken, etc. Every detail by Luke is absolutely 100% correct, all right? So then he's going to be wrong about Jesus? I don't think so. Back to you.
No. Yeah. No, and why is it, if Jesus didn't exist, why always is the world using his name and cursing his name
right?
for a people that didn't even exist?
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Give me a break.
Yeah. another fairy tale. The world is living in a fairy tale, right? The secular world is. It's called evolution. Oh, yeah. Back to you.
Oh, yeah. And now lately, the corona hoax.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
Okay. If there is one thing that organized religion of most brand names has succeeded in doing, it is to make the very real people we read of in the New Testament into almost mythological figures as cardboard, cut out as those brightly colored sheets of nativity figures they used, to give us in Sunday school. Yet, secular history is not at all silent about them, and legend is fertile with accounts of their exploits, travels, and their relationships. History tells us a lot about how those people lived and traveled.
Yes.
Yes, and that is this, what you call it. We need to study to show ourselves approved. We need to read, we have to to connect also history with the scriptures.
Right.
That is what we need to do. And that is so make it so fascinating to read about the Parthian Empire and who they were.
Yeah.
And over to you.
Yeah, just recently I saw it. I couldn't find it again, but a post that 2,700 so-called Christian ministers have been telling their flocks to get vaccinated. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
2,700. Okay? And so, what about Mystery Babylon? Have you not read the book of Revelation and Taking the Mark of the Beast? Have you not read that? Okay? Well, most of these people are infiltrators. And the average Christian doesn't know that this goes back to the tax-exempt corporations and, of course, the Jews setting their agents in place over various denominations, infiltrating them with homosexuals and communists. This goes back to the 1930s, folks. So this infiltration has been taking place for, 80 years now? Okay,
mm-hmm.
And you cannot trust a Judeo-Christian minister. You cannot trust them at all. That includes the Catholics. Back to you. My turn. Sorry.
Then isn't it also this? Isn't it that was also the, what do you say, the perfect place for the devil to hide where the Christians believe they are not in their own churches?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I was actually there at the National Cathedral, and I saw the Glastonbury thorn they have there. I wasn't there at Christmas tide or Easter tide, as they call it, right? So I didn't see it bloom, but it is still there, as far as I know. Somebody tried to chop down the original Glastonbury thorn in Britain, but I believe they were able to save part of it and had to start from scratch, had to plant it in the ground, and it grew. Okay, so there are people who hate Jesus Christ, Yahshua Messiah. Can you believe it? Michael,
but still, the secular world said it didn't exist. So how can you hate this one? I don't get that, Eli. It did exist. So this is that they are tripping on their own toes all the time, or I don't know, hoist on their petards maybe.
Yeah. Well, if they chop down the tree and it doesn't bloom again, see, they can claim it was just a legend, right? Okay. Family tree of Jesus. Ancient tradition says that Anne, the mother of Virgin Mary, was of Cornish origin, i.e. she was British. It is not generally known, but there is a family tree of Jesus from the time of Adam in the Herald's office at the English College of Arms. I actually have a copy of that, or at least a printout of the family tree, not the actual copy of the document. From that document, we glean the information that Anne, mother of the Virgin Mary, was married three times. Her first husband was Joachim, by whom she had the Virgin Mary. Her second husband was Cleophas, and her third, Salome. See John 19:25. It would seem Anne liked the name Mary, for in addition to the Virgin Mary, she named the daughters by her two other husbands Mary also. Okay, talk about confusion. But let's go on. I guess they were able to tell them apart by sight, right? All right, Joachim, first husband, Virgin Mary, and the descendants, Jesus and Joseph, Okay, I'm not sure. What Joseph is he talking about? Is he talking about Joseph of Arimathea? Being a descendant? No, it can't be. Joseph of Arimathea was Mary's uncle. So this has to be some other Joseph. Maybe he'll explain in the. Or maybe he's talking about Joseph, husband of Mary? I'm not sure. Anyway, Anne, Cleophas, second husband. Mary, Alphaeus, James, Simeon, Jude, Barsabbas, and then Salome, third husband. Oh, from the third husband, I see. Again, this chart, he should have made this chart clearer. He in the first part, he lists the first husband, Joachim. And it, oh, I think there's something, this chart is off. I think Anne should be listed under Joseph in the first part of the chart, okay? So Cleophas and Salome was the third husband? Okay, I guess it's unusual. I've never heard of a man named Salome. That's always been a woman's name, as far as I can recall. Anyway, the third husband, according to this chart, is Salome. And the children are Mary Zebedee, John the Divine, and Saint James, according to this chart. Okay, I've never seen this before, and it may all be true, because that would explain the correct relationship. Because most people say that Mary had John the Divine and James also, that they're quote unquote brothers of Jesus, so they would be half brothers. Okay. From Mary or from Anne, so they would be cousins or half brothers, right? That's the only way I can make sense of it. There's a problem with the way this chart is recreated here online. Okay, Mary Salome, mother of the disciples James and John of Zebedee, was also a second cousin to Virgin Mary. Andrew and John were friends of the family through John the Baptist. The father of John the Baptist was Zechariah, who was assassinated between the temple and the altar for proclaiming the virgin birth. Very interesting. I know Yahshua talks about Zechariah being murdered by the Pharisees, okay, but he doesn't say why. So Arnold Kennedy is saying the reason was because he proclaimed the virgin birth. Very interesting. Anne had a sister by the name of Bianca, who was the mother of Saint Joseph. Okay, Saint Joseph, the husband, future husband of Mary, I believe he means. Thus, Saint Joseph, the Virgin Mary's husband, was also her first cousin. That is an important fact in the development of this inquiry because it would indicate that Joseph of Arimathea was an uncle of both Mary and Joseph. So you need to have a flow chart here, folks. And these brief charts that Arnold Kennedy is giving us here aren't very clear. All right. So Bianca, aunt of the Virgin Mary, Joseph, husband of Mary, Jesus. So she's saying that Joseph, Saint Joseph, as most people know him, was a son of Bianca. And then also Elizabeth and John the Baptist are descended from Bianca.
Then
Okay,
there, yeah, so that makes sense, I guess.
that's apparently what he's saying. I would have to investigate this further. Anyway, this view is confirmed in the Harl MSS manuscript, which is held in the British Museum. It will come as a surprise to many to realize that far from being confined to Palestine, the Holy Family seem, through the Virgin Mary's uncle Joseph of Arimathea, to have been intermarried into British royalty and to have left Palestine to live in Britain. Okay, certainly Joseph did, and it's quite possible that Mary lived with him in Britain before coming back to Palestine. Probably it had to be in Palestine because that's where the house of Pharez Judah was still located, right? And Yahshua had to fulfill all the prophecies that he would come to Palestine and be the Redeemer. Okay, so it's quite possible that Mary grew up in Britain and then went to Palestine. Quite possible. Continuing. Some have assumed that the Virgin Mary's exile in Britain was brought about by a forced exodus from the Holy Land, but there is evidence that both Jesus and Joseph of Arimathea had planned for a life in Britain for the family from the time Jesus was quite young. It would seem that the forced exodus after the resurrection of Jesus was a preempting of an already carefully laid plan. The story that I'm familiar with, Michael, is that the Holy Family was put on a raft and set afloat in the Mediterranean to where fate would probably, kill them, drown them. That was if I'm not mistaken, the Pharisees actually set that raft out. But that just may be a legend. Maybe he's right about this. Okay, back to you. This article is way more difficult than I was expecting. All right, back to you.
Yeah, I also looked at those trees he had above, and they are maybe they have been in the format of this article makes them very hard to follow. But yes, okay, let's continue. A relative of the Virgin Mary marries into the British royal family. Confirmation that Peredin, granddaughter of Joseph of Arimathea, married King Lear of Britain, is to be found in the manuscript, which is held at Jesus College in England. From the chart below, we can see the contemporary nature of evidence. Oh, we have one more of those charts.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, here is Joseph of Arimathea, uncle of the Virgin Mary and Joseph. We have Anna. We have Penardine, married British King Lear.
Yes.
Bra, British King. And Caractus, British King. Gladys, British princess. Princess, yeah, who married Roman nobleman Rufus, Pudens, and changed her name to Claudia and became host to the Apostle Paul.
Okay, so it looks like what he's saying is all of these people are descended from Joseph of Arimathea. This is very new information to me, but here, let me repeat. So, Joseph of Arimathea, if this is a genealogical chart, he's saying Anna, Penardum, Bran, Caractacus, Gladys, Rufus Pudens was a Roman nobleman, which means he was of Zerah, Judah, not Pharaoh's Judah, and changed her name to Claudia and became host to the Apostle Paul. So all of these people, except Rufus Pudens, were of Pharaoh's Judah. So here again, we see that the two houses, the two lines of descent coming from Judah, Pharaoh's Judah and Zerah Judah, had intermarried at various points throughout history. And this was one of, I think there's at least three times that those two lines of descent from Judah intermarried to, make it one line of descent. Again, back to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes, here we see that they are coming together as both Pharaoh and Sarah Judah.
Amen.
Yes, and Paul says in Romans 16:3, statute Rufus chosen in the Lord. Yeah, there we have the same name. Mm-hmm. We have a statute. I don't know what that one is, but we have Rufus chosen in the Lord and his mother and mine. Mm-hmm. If this is the same Rufus, then Paul and Rufus were half-brothers.
Okay.
Remember that Paul was a Roman citizen also, but not by race. Paul was of the tribe of Benjamin, even if he was a Roman by citizenship. The Roman connection of Paul is ignored by the traditional churches, but we can see the importance. Going into this further, we find that Apostle Paul was a half-brother of the Roman Rufus Pudens and a brother-in-law of the British princess Claudia. When Apostle Paul presented the gospel in Britain, he had friends in high places. There are many historical records that present Britain as being the first kingdom to receive the gospel.
Amen.
Paul had other relatives in the ministry, some we're apostles.
Okay, so let me just say a little bit about this, because, again, it's history that has been destroyed by the Catholic Church, because whatever year it was, I think it was 600 AD, that the Catholic Church tried to wipe out the Celtic Church of Britain. That Celtic Church is these people and other Israelites that the Celts and the Scots. The Scots would be included in that. Okay, the Welsh. These people were Israelites who learned of the coming of Christ from the certain apostles. I'm pretty sure Peter also went to Britain for a short time. Certainly Paul did. And the lost chapter of Acts, Acts chapter 29, conveys that information that Paul went to Britain and to France and even possibly to Switzerland, okay, which was known as Helvetia at that time. Okay, so there's all kinds of secular information about this, and somebody may have deliberately chopped off the last chapter of Acts to maybe a Catholic did, all right, to prevent this information about Paul being in Britain getting out. Back to you.
Yeah, they want to distort it. They want to hide it. They want to make they want their view, their.
Right. Catholicism. Prevailed. Catholicism, the Holy Roman Empire, so-called. Yeah.
Yeah, and they want to make everybody part of it. But as you said, that this church is a church by race, by DNA, not by what you proclaim. If you just proclaim Jesus' name, are you saved by that, even if you're not by that race? Well, no, you're not.
No.
You're not. Yeah. So, okay, let's continue. Romans 16:7 said, salute
Andronicus in English.
And Junia, my kinsmen and my fellow prisoners, who are of note among the apostles, who also were in Christ before me.
Yes, now this is interesting, because Paul had to be protected by Rufus Pudens, who was obviously a very high-ranking Roman. Okay, so there had to be a lot of, you know, conflict between the British Romans, okay, the British who had married back into Rome, because the Britain was founded by the Romans, okay, from Troy, the Romans from Troy, okay, and so they landed at what was Caer Troy, meaning New Troy, which is today known as London. Okay, and there the British Empire was really founded by the Zarajuda. Okay, the British Empire was founded by Zarajuda, but there was conflict between the British Zarajudaites and the Roman Zarajudaites down the line, and of course when the emperors became totally corrupt under Nero, you know, there was no possibility of either Peter or Paul, you know, surviving Nero's purges, you know, if either one of them lived that long, you know, certainly, you know, but Peter is said to have died in the East, not in Rome, okay? And there is no chance that Peter was ever a pope, absolutely no chance whatever, and neither was Paul. Back to you.
Yes, okay. Let's continue then with some of those Greek words. Okay, Romans 16:21. Timotheus, my work fellow, and Lucius and Jason and Sosipater, my kinsmen, salute you. I'm sorry if I'm butchering the words here.
Yeah, I would too. you must be a Levite. You're butchering stuff. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. Let's continue.
All right.
It is interesting to note that the King Arthur and all the kings of the Round Table claimed descendants from Joseph of Arimathea.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, nice. They were from Judah.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The above genealogies are important.
Genealogies of Deutsch. All right.
You hear what it was. Are important because they are given an altogether different perspective of the interrelationship of the nations at the time of Jesus.
Yes.
Then, as now, it would seem that the rich, influential, and famous knew each other and had far more in common than we would at first think. Note the following British connections.
Okay.
A granddaughter of Joseph of Arimathea, cousin to the Virgin Mary, married a member of the British royal family. A member of the British royal family married a Roman commander. An apostle of Jesus is entertained by a British princess in Rome. A member of the British royal family is the first bishop of Rome, not the first pope.
Right. There you go. Yeah, the first pope, so-called, to say the bishop of bishops is really what the word pope means. And there was nobody in the Vatican that proclaimed himself such until 607 A.D., okay? There was no such terminology as pope, papa, until 607 A.D., all right? So this was well into the, you know, later stages, or should the middle stages of the papacy, okay? So, there was no such terminology. So it couldn't have applied to Rome until 607 A.D., all right? Please continue.
Okay. This places the British in the center of things. Israel in Britain starts with some of the tribe of Dan traveling there soon after Exodus. We find the prophet Jeremiah took the royal daughter of Zedekiah, the last Israelite king in Palestine, to Egypt and thence to Ireland. See Jeremiah 41:10. The royal house of Judah, thus continued in Britain. History throws a different perspective on the world at that time, a different perspective that we have been led to believe. History is his story. Yes, it is his story.
Right. Okay, well, there's an error here. Zedekiah was not the last Israelite king in Palestine. Zedekiah was the last before the Babylonian captivity, okay? The 70-year Babylonian captivity, but Ezra and Nehemiah reestablished the throne of Judah in Palestine upon returning from Babylon, okay? So he's overlooking that part of it. Otherwise, Yahshua could not be king of Israel, all right? He has to be descended from David. And so basically what happened was that Ezra, I forget, there was another gentleman before Ezra and Nehemiah who was the leader, governor, slash king of the Judahites upon the return from Babylon, okay? So that continued the royal, the prophecy states, all it says, Michael, is that there will always be someone, there will always be a Judahite available to become king of Israel. It doesn't say it will be a direct line of descent. There will always be a Judahite available to sit on the throne of David. And that's what happened, okay? So they had to pick the people most worthy at the time, okay? All right, so we have about 10 minutes left. And I think rather than start the next section, I have a document here. So if you'll indulge me, Michael, this is an article about James being in Spain. Okay, this is by Reverend J.A.B. Haggart of the USA. And he says here, of the 12 apostles, James the Elder has always been associated with Spain. Unlike his brother John, who immediately followed Yahshua after the Master was baptized in the River Jordan, James was called later when sitting in a boat with their father Zebedee, mending their nets for the next catch. Walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, the Master had called Peter and Andrew, who already were throwing out their nets to fish. He beckoned James and John also. At Yahshua's call, they all stopped their work except Zebedee and went with him. As James gained a certain amount of training, he became a man of deep dedication and authority.